Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everybody. This is your host, Tim Grutzius, for Blog Talk Radio, The Resiliency of Peer Support. We are in technical difficulties, but it appears that the show is going to be a go. I'm just waiting for our host, Paul, to call in, and then we should be on our way. So tonight's episode is going to be dealing with the resiliency of peer support. And one of the things that I've had in the past for me as a peer supporter is I started thinking about, well, what could happen? You know, we're doing all this peer support. We're listening to other people, helping them out. And how does that affect us? Could it affect us in a different way? And one of the things that's unique about PTSDChat.org is that it's an online support community for those diagnosed with or they want to learn about all things PTSD and what can that do to us? And there may be a time where you're not prepared for what is going to happen on that other end of the line, or if you're on a blog, you might take somebody aside and do a direct messaging with them, or how do I want to say this? You're going to be doing a direct messaging with them, and they may be dumping a lot on you, or you may be going there to receive peer support. And where we some of the topics we want to talk about is what does that do? What can that do to peer support? Or are we resilient enough? What are some of the things that we can do to ground ourselves? So as soon as we get Paul to call in, we're gonna get started with our show. So one of the things that I did was several months ago, almost a year ago, and Paul's here now, so hang on. We apologize for the technical difficulties here.
That's fine.
Hi, Paul. It's Tim. How are you?
Good, Tim. How you doing, brother?
Good. We are live on the show now, and it's scheduled for 60 minutes instead of the 30 minutes, so we're going to just try to roll with this as we go along. So I guess the first thing that I'm going to have you do while I work a couple things in the background is give our listeners your background, what you do now, and your history. How did you become involved with, like, peer support or line of duty, that just so then they have a context as to who you are and what your mission in life is.
Okay, I'll try to keep it to about 58 minutes.
All right, there you go. That'll work.
You know, I've been in the fire service for 34 years now. I started my career end of it about 26 and a half years ago. I started with New York City Fire Department, then transferred up here to Westchester County, where I currently work. I'm also an assistant chief in a fire district just north of New York City here. And the fire service, you know, it's been obviously a passion, something that I loved long before I even joined up. And most of the time, it's second to none. You know, most of the time it is absolutely amazing. And then there are times when it's not so great. And then that's really what brings us to talk about this stuff tonight. But when I first transferred from the city to Westchester, where I am now, there was a lady who I worked with who was on the local peer support team. And, you know, after a few months of working together, she came to me and she said, you know, I'm on this team and here's what we do. And she says, you know, I think you have it. Now, all these years later, nobody will tell me what it is, but she says, you've got it, you know, and whether it's a presence or whatever, I don't know. And, I started getting involved. I started taking classes, and I got very involved with a very, very busy team. And I got to tell you, I took to it like a duck to water. I fell in love with it because in my core, and Tim, I know certainly in yours, and Sue's and many others, there's just that want to be able to help people. And while that, I think, is just amazing, it goes to a different level when you're talking about not only the intimacy and the horror that goes with the stuff that many of us go through, but a different level when we're dealing with those who have been through the same thing as us, who have worn that T-shirt, who have smelt it and seen it and heard it. On June 22nd, 1997, I survived a fire that killed my lieutenant. And that was kind of my springboard to getting involved in line of duty death. I had been around some, you know, previously in the city, but this probably brought to a different level, and I was right in the middle of everything, not only at the fire that morning, but in the aftermath and the week of planning and working with the family. And I sat back afterward and said, you know, there has to be a bigger lesson in this. There has to be something good in this, because if you don't find something good in the things that are so tough, that's when I believe it's in vain. And that's when I started really studying this whole phenomenon of line of duty death, and not just the first week, because that's when everybody is there, but months and years later. And that's how I've spent the past 20 years, not only providing peer support, teaching, coordinating peer support in CISM services, but working line of duty deaths. I've written some courses on it and some articles, and that's what I do. And I wouldn't have signed up for it. I wouldn't have chosen to lost 34 friends in the line of duty or another 14 to suicide. They're horrible events, but and certainly for those of us with PTSD, you know, they're all challenging, but this is how we give back. And whether it's working the line of duty death, whether it's working with a, you know, a firefighter, a nurse, a police officer, a dispatcher who handled a bad call, or working with others with PTSD for whatever reason, whatever cause that brought this on, I think it's a whole lot more effective as peers. And when you add to that then the peers working with mental health providers, working with faith-based providers and other resources, there are so many resources there for us that I it's my mission. I know it's yours as well, Tim, as well as those people listening, I believe, to get more of that word out there, to get those people the help and kind of come out of this darkness in which PTSD has been kept for so, so long. So in the short version, that's kind of what I do.
Yeah, and that's incredible work, and I know it wasn't too long ago, I remember seeing you tweeting that it was the anniversary of your lieutenant's death, and I think I tweeted back saying that you were definitely making him proud, because I think you kind of put that question out there saying, I'm hoping I'm making you proud, and there's no doubt about it that you're doing the work, you know, and again, once we retire from here, what are we going to do after that? And, you know, I've always thought that it's really try to make this world a better place to live, and there's no doubt that you are doing that. Here's, I guess, the long and short of what we're trying to do tonight is everybody that comes to PTSD Chat, they are coming, they want to learn about all things PTSD, either they've been diagnosed with it or they just want to learn about it. It could be healthcare providers. It could be just another civilian, somebody that's coming to try to look. And it's coming from across the globe that people are coming around here to provide or receive peer support. And one of the things I started thinking about, and I wrote a blog for our Illinois Firefighter Peer Support, was that we are not Teflon. And some of these things might stick. And I guess the call to action that I put out there is that usually you get this, at least it's my impression is that psychologists or psychiatrists, people that are in that type of field that are listening to other people's problems all day, go to their own therapy session or some type of a group support to unload what they had. And I started thinking about, well, what does this, you know, doing all this peer support and we're listening to people, or in your case, you're involved with a lot of line of duty death. That's even adding another level onto are the load that we're taking on, you know, how does that, how could that, does that affect our psyche as
sure.
well as, you know, the call, the, my call to action was, well, maybe we need to check in every once in a while. Most of the people
yep.
that I've known that are on our peer support team, they have been to counseling, I'd say the great majority, you know, then we get through that, you know, we get through that hump, but is there times where we have these ups and downs that we need to go through this again? Now, when you're talking about people that are not trained to be peer support personnel, like anybody that comes to this chat, they may be pulling somebody off to the side into direct messaging just to take them out of the main chat to make sure, you know, to just, hey, let me deal with you, let me talk with you. Are they being affected in any way? So we're going to go through several questions. I'm going to throw them out to you, and then we're going to hopefully come up with some strategies or things that, based on our experience as peer support people, what could the people who are not trained to do that, what can they do? And they're being, you know, asked simultaneously about all these different things. So in your own words, what does peer support mean to you?
I mean, peer support is, you know, to me, the simplest sense of those words. It's others who do what you do, who have been through what you've been through, helping each other. I mean, you know, years ago when it was time for me to stop drinking, my resolution wasn't necessarily to go away. My resolution wasn't necessarily to go to a mental health provider. I am, you know, a huge advocate. I've certainly spent my time on the couch. But the person that helped me the most, quite honestly, was another firefighter. And, you know, that to me is the essence of peer support. And that has been my platform for a very long time, that peer support, if you're going to work peer support, specifically with first responders, military personnel, it's not just the trauma. It's all the other stuff that goes with it. You're going to have firefighters who have gone through horrible divorces and substance abuse problems and financial problems, and those things all add up to what? To add up to stress. And that is the essence of peer support, is that for those who've gone through divorces, other firefighters, other police officers, whomever, who've gone through the same situation, who have fared pretty well through it, those are the people you want to belly up to. The people who have worn the T-shirt, who've seen it and heard it. So, you know, you don't have to be from the same backgrounds, but somebody who's been through the same types of things. Those of us with PTSD, you know, it doesn't matter what the event was, what the events were, what the circumstances were. It's here's what we have now. Just as you have cancer support networks. It doesn't matter what kind of cancer you have. It doesn't matter how you got it. It's other people helping each other. That's my take on it.
And I couldn't agree more. And how I put it is that we've walked a certain green mile to get to where this is at. And, you know, that you want to get the concept of peer support is try to give hope to others that they could be able to get through what they're going through as well. And, you know, as I've been, for as long as I've been involved with this chat, you know, you could, sometimes it was just, you know, at the start, just observing and not doing a lot of participation, but you can see that there's a lot of people on here that still, they need that support. They need to make that connection and that hope. And that's, and hopefully tonight, and that we're going to be able to provide some of that hope to them. That
yeah.
this is how you're going. This is how you can get through things. And one of the things that we have to realize is that, that you know, we may have one trigger event, and for
mm-hmm.
you it was, I'm sure, most surely for you, it's your lieutenant dying in a fire that you survived. For me, it was a colleague that committed suicide on my watch, and we had to respond to that call, and basically we had
yep.
to watch him die.
Yeah.
And then you go through that struggles of ups and downs of undiagnosed PTSD. But once you get kind of get that diagnosis, or you start being able to figure out, well, all right, this is what's going on with me. How am I gonna deal with this now? And that's the same for anybody that's on here. You know, like you said, Sue Wood is a big point person on this chat to keep it running, and she's always taking people aside or even having just conversations within the chat, trying to help people out. And she's, you know, as she said, I'm not a first responder or anything like that, but I'm somebody that has this issue and I'm learning about it and I'm helping at the same time.
Yep, absolutely.
So given your personal background then, how do you feel when you provide or receive peer support, either, and it could be, and this was a general question to everybody out there, but either through the open chat or private direct messaging with another person, like how do you feel, what's your emotions like when you have to provide peer support?
I mean, it's really a case-by-case basis. It depends on the event. It depends on the people. I mean, you know, the thing is I would say the vast majority of the peer support sessions, whether they're one-on-one, whether they're group interventions, most of those are not, you know, really heavy, you know, emotional events. Some certainly are, no question. Some quite honestly are just really, really challenging to be there with. But overall, in a single word, humbled. I mean, just really, you know, the intimacy that goes behind working with somebody who's been through a horrible event. First off, you know, if you don't feel humbled that they've opened up to you, that they've let you in, you know, that then I don't know what will humble you. It's a huge honor. You know, we don't do it for our edification. Many of us got involved in this because we've all been through our own challenges, and this is our way of giving back. You know, there's been a sense from a lot of folks over the years I've been doing this. I've been doing this about almost 25 years now, and teaching this for over 20. And there are a lot of folks who say, well, you know, I'm an emotional person, and what if we start getting emotional? You know, I'm not of help to those people. Yeah, you absolutely are. Yeah, absolutely are. I mean, listen, I will tell you, and friends that know me, I'm a crier. You know, I cry at Disney movies and silly commercials. I'm an emotional guy. Because I wasn't always that way. For a long time, I just didn't feel. And whether that was a byproduct of my PTSD or other things, I don't know. But, you know, what that emotion feels that's going to come out sometimes is that's the empathy. You know, that's that psychological alignment. That's, you know, the two hearts saying, we're there. I feel what you feel. I don't know what you feel, but I know what I have felt going through these things. And it's tough. You know, some are more difficult than others. I was absolutely involved in the Newtown shootings in 12, and I will tell you that my son was the same age as those children at the time. And that was a tough one to provide peer support for. But, you know, you have to have your safety mechanism in place that you go and you do the job, not unlike any of us do, certainly that are first responders or others. You go and you do your job, you do what you're there for, and then you go back and you recoup. And I can tell you, you know, not ashamed of it at all, that my first phone call when I finished my deployment there was to my therapist and said, you know, clear your schedule. I'm coming in. And, you know, she earned her money. But you have to do that. I think you have to do that. You can't talk the talk. You have to walk the walk.
Exactly.
And we're not, even as peer support, I don't care what kind of training you have. I don't care how many initials you have before or after your name. Nobody's immune to this. You know, I have had the honor of doing, you know, and whether you want to call it true peer support, but having provided one-on-ones or having these very long intimate talks with people far more educated than I, far smarter than I, you know, who are going through challenges. And it's an honor.
I mean, and I couldn't agree with you more. It's just, and we're going to get into it in a little bit, how do you prepare yourself, things like that. And, again, this is a lot of these were directed towards the people that are on this chat, but it still would apply to us, you know, with that emotion. Do you find yourself trying, like if you're going to get emotional or you're sharing tears with somebody, do you find that you try to ground yourself or you try to suppress that emotion, or you just let it flow freely?
You know, again, it depends on what the situation is. You know, I mean, again, it's the vast majority of you know, the one-on-one support you're going to do or group support you're going to do, it's not going to be all that emotional. I'm not saying it's not, you know, it's certainly a sensitive issue, but, you know, it does happen. And there are times that, quite honestly, you know, you sit there and you try to kind of sniffle it down and keep it from coming out. And there's times that you just say, you know what, it is what it is. I will
right.
absolutely tell you that when we did our sessions after my lieutenant was killed and on being on the receiving end, that one of the firefighters who was providing the peer support sessions, who was tremendous, and this is one of the most talented people I've ever worked with, providing peer support, and he came in with a tremendous amount of credibility. I remember looking up, you know, as we were in the circle at one point, and there were tears coming down his face. And you know what? What that really said to me was, I'm here with you. You know, I understand it. I feel it. And that was one of those things that stood out as being the most helpful. I'm almost worried sometimes if you have people who don't feel that they're affected by some of this sometimes. How can you not? And that's, I think, what probably a lot of this discussion is geared at is we have training. Hopefully we have standardized training. We have many years in our vocations that back us up in this, but we're not immune to it. You know, how much of it can you go through before you get caught, you know?
And so your recommendation to anybody that's providing peer support would be that if they need be, you know, you need to reach out to somebody, you know, like a therapist if you're working with one, and really talk about how these things affect you, like own your emotions on it, so to speak. Like if some, you know, like if you got emotional about providing a peer support or a peer contact, and you got emotional about it, is it something that you reflect on, like you said, what was it, Newton, that when you went to your therapist, she earned her money, did you like describe your emotions or try to really figure out why it is you were feeling the way it is? And that could be for any peer support you do or line of duty, death you attend. Do you try to reflect on your emotions? And try to understand what they, you know, what it really is, or are you just taking it that this is something that happened organically?
Well, I can tell you that, you know, for me, after Newtown, I certainly didn't have to describe my emotions. They were right there. They were all raw. And they were what they were. Here's the thing, though. You know, we put so much weight on, you know, should we be emotional? Should we not be emotional? You know, and if you're getting emotional, you know, do we have to go talk to somebody? You know what? Not always. I think one of the things we need to do overall as peer support members, and whether we're on the giving or receiving end, is stop reacting to reacting. You know, the emotion is one of our, it's a blessed human emotion, quite honestly. It's a natural emotion. And really one that most of us can't control. And nor should we. It's part of a process. And just because somebody becomes emotional, and whether it be providing, you know, peer support or for whatever reason, it doesn't mean that, you know, they're in a bad spot, that they're in danger. It means that they've got a heart. It means that they've got feelings. And I got to tell you what, that's the person I want helping my department. That's the person I want helping me, is somebody who cares. You know, it's almost become in our society, you know, almost taboo. You know, don't feel, don't show your emotion, certainly in our vocations. And I think that, quite honestly, that's hurt a lot of us probably more than anything else. You know, the more you stuff that spring down, that's going to come up. Well, the same is true for peer support members. You know, we don't get called, as peer support members, we don't get called to the bad stuff. We get called to the worst of the bad stuff. And
right.
You know, as I tell people, you want to know what I do with peer support? You look at the top three stories on the news. That's what we do every day. And so, of course, some of it's going to get to you now and then. It's knowing what mechanisms, what your plan of action is. You know going into some of these that this is going to be a heavy one. I am blessed. I have an amazing team of peers and mental health providers and pastoral care providers here on my team with me. And I know that at a moment's notice, I can reach out to any of them. If I'm going with a team, I've got them there with me. Other people on the team who are not going on that call out know that we're going. They also know that they're probably getting a phone call from somebody at least to check in the next day or two. but I also know who I've got lined up that should anything really go sour. And, you know, I've got a great group at work that they don't, I've got a couple people who are peer support providers at work, but, you know, that humor that we tend to have in the fire service, that's a survival mechanism. And I am blessed to be able to have that. It's not always pretty, but I'm blessed.
Right.
It really helps in stress relief, you know?
I hear you. So what I'm hearing, what I'm hearing is that you're saying to be vulnerable when needed to be, when need be vulnerable, and that would be probably one of the best ways that you can make a connection with another that is seeking your services.
Oh, you know, being vulnerable, I mean, again, I think some people look at that in a negative sense. I think more so we can call it being real.
Okay.
You know, I mean, how can you not, when you're sitting across from somebody who is just pouring out the worst, most unimaginable stuff that Hollywood could not put into a script, and they are just, and again, it's not always like that, you know. A vast majority of what we do, it's just a talk. But for those ones that are really heavy, how can you not be affected by that sometimes, you know? And I'm worried about the person who is on the receiving end of that, the person who's there to help, and they're not affected somehow, you know? You know, yeah, okay, it may not happen while you're doing that, and maybe that's a good thing. I'm not sure. I don't think there is necessarily a right or wrong in that sense. But sometimes you're going to go home from these. I'd be worried if you weren't affected somehow. Now, it doesn't mean that
right.
you have to run to a couch. It doesn't mean that you're not cut out for this stuff. It means you're a human being. And I think that that's one of the challenges in many of our vocations, and without turning this into sociology 101 in our societies, is that we've almost had to become non-human. We've almost had to become the robots. If we're the helpers, if we're the rescuers, if we're the first responders or military members or others, that's what we have to be. We can't feel things. We can't think things. And that is one of the things that I think has hurt us.
And the stigma associated with if we ask for help, then that shows a sign of weakness, when in reality, it's probably one of the most courageous acts we could do.
Well, the question is, Tim, in the fire service, you know, we use RIT teams regularly. Okay? Here in New York, we call them fasting. And the question is always, when do you sound a mayday? You don't sound a mayday when you're in trouble. You sound a mayday when you think you're in trouble. And maybe you're just on the other side of a wall that somebody's got to breach and get you out of there. Maybe you're turned around in a corner and you get yourself out in a few seconds. This isn't any different. There's no, you know, there's no shame in it. It's about survival. It's about survival because that old culture of if you can't stand the heat, get out of the kitchen. You know, it's a sign of weakness. I did that. I did that when I first joined at 17. 3 weeks after my 17th birthday, I saw a decapitation. I'm 17 years old. I didn't know what to do with that. But I knew what I wasn't going to do. I knew I wasn't going to go to my company officer and say, hey, that messed me up. I want to be the tough firefighter. So I suppressed it. And I did that for many years. And I can tell you that didn't work because I spent the 80s in a bottle. So you know what? I think what we have to be able to do is give ourselves permission to be human beings once in a while, to say we're going to see some pretty rough things. Some will be tough. Some will be, well, they're sad, but okay, I'm going home at the end of the shift. But give ourselves permission.
Very good. So we'll add this. This is the next question that I'm going to follow up with. We're gonna just take it from if you know going in to, like, providing peer support or line of duty, that it's going to be a really rough one or a bad one, that you know most assuredly that you're going to be affected in some way. You know, how do you prepare yourself prior to providing that peer support do you do? Is there any kind of a ritual or grounding techniques that you do that we can offer to those listening tonight or participating in the chat? Because they may show up here and they never know what they're going to get from a multitude of people across the globe. So is there anything that you do prior to making that first contact with whoever you need to make contact with?
Absolutely. There's a couple things. You know, first off, self-awareness is so critically important. And, you know, I've always been an advocate of those who are providing peer support should be doing so as a part of a team. Team should know its membership, especially the leaders of that team should know the membership, not just vocationally and professionally, but personally as well. If you know somebody who's going through a particularly tough patch in their life, loss of a parent, trouble at home, whatever it may be, you know, maybe that's not the person to go out and do peer support tonight.
Right.
So I think that there has to be some personal accountability to that, that, you know, self-awareness of saying, you know, now it's just really not a good time. I've done 30 hours of overtime this week. I'm exhausted physically and emotionally. And because the bottom line is that it's not about us. It's about going and helping them. But if we're not at close to 100%, because on any given day, most of us are around 80 anyway. But if we're not somewhere close to 80 or 100%, then are we really the best help for them? You know, and that's my big thing. So first off, self-awareness. Where am I right now? Am I in a good place? I can tell you that, you know, during a divorce that I went through, I just didn't do a whole lot of peer support stuff because I just wasn't in a good place for a lot of that time. And I need to be able to take a step back. Also, knowing what your triggers are. You have people who are stronger, let's say, at one-on-ones than group, and people who are better at group stuff than one-on-ones. You have people that, for me, line of duty deaths, as horrible as they are, they're a piece of cake because I've done so many of them. You know, it's and not just for providing peer support, but the coordination, logistics, working with command staff, working with families, that's what I know. Me, as far as peer support, if I can avoid it, I don't like to go on kid calls. I've lost a lot of kids out there on the streets, and I have 3 kids of my own. And, you know, I have to be aware of that. The members of my team know that. I'll coordinate the call out, but if I don't have to go on that call out, and that leads to the other part of it, is it's a luxury we have. It's a luxury we have in peer support. You know, Tim, as well as I, that when we're on shift, you have to go to what you're sent on. You know, it's the nature of the beast. You know, here's where you're going, here's what you're going to find. Well, okay. And there are times that we go to this thing, but this is not going to be great. A luxury we have, and one I think we need to exercise in peer support, is there are some calls that we say, you know what, it's either not a good time for me or this isn't something I'm really, really comfortable with. That's why you should have a team. That's why the team should have other teams around it, whether they're a half hour away or an hour away or 4 hours away, that you can tap on the shoulder and say, hey, you know, we need some extra help tonight. I don't think it's a weakness. The reality is I think it's a strength. And I think if we really practice those things, the self-awareness and, you know, not being too proud to bow out once in a while and say, you know, not the thing I should be doing tonight, that's how we give them the best care possible, the people we're going to go help.
Very good. So it's like what we practice situational awareness when we go out on a call and otherwise. Know yourself and know that you're not right to do it. So if you... Is there anything that you do as a grounding technique, so to speak? Because I'm, and most people that know me know that I do a lot of Eastern practices like yoga and acupuncture, things like that, to help keep me grounded, Reiki, stuff like that. Is there anything that you do, you know, to, number one, ground yourself prior to providing peer support? And during it, and during the peer support?
There are things that I do, and I don't know what I would call them rituals, and I don't know what I would call them necessarily, you know, grounding. There are things that I do that I think I do to be able to help me provide the best care for them that I can, at least. you know, one thing is being present, and not just in mind, but being present in mind and body. The two have to go, you know, with each other. And for me, part of that is saying, well, maybe I shouldn't go in there with, you know, my venti bold from Starbucks. You know, maybe I shouldn't go in there all caffeined up, because that's probably not going to be the best thing for them, and certainly not going to be the best thing for me. You know, I don't wear a watch. I don't bring my phone in with me. If I do, I leave it somewhere else, whether it be in the car or, you know, in my day planner or whatever I'm bringing with me, my knapsack, because I don't want those distractions. Again, I have to be present physically and emotionally. And that, for me, is part of the grounding. So I prep that. I start doing that maybe sometimes a couple hours out. You know, take care of your personal needs before you go in there. If I'm doing a one-on-one on the phone, which I do all the time, you know, if for some reason there's something pressing in my life, if my kids are, you know, somewhere that I know I'm going to have to give them a ride later on tonight, I'll preface that one-on-one on the phone by saying, listen, right now you are the most important thing for me. But just so you know, I may get a text or a phone call in about an hour from one of my kids. Just so you know, if it's okay, I'll drop real quick. I'll pick that phone up. I'll come back to you. But, you know, so doing what I can to smooth as much of the water as I can, because we know that once you get going, there's going to be enough, you know, ripples in the water. Prepare yourself, you know, don't get caffeined up. You know, make sure you've eaten. I mean, it's really very, very basic, but it's, you know, basic human needs. You got to take care of that stuff beforehand. You got to be in a decent place. You know, other than that, we all have rituals, things that help us relax, and that really is more towards the stress management end of it, which I think is critically important. You know, that helps us with our resiliency. That helps us with providing our resources or our services for others. For me, baking, cooking, watering flowers, candles, you know, the super macho stuff. I love that stuff because it does ground me. It's, you know, it's stuff that's not in the firehouse. It's not, you know, going 80 miles an hour. I water the plants and flowers before coming in for this call. Why? Because after working the past three tours of sheer madness, I wanted that 45 minutes of a buffer to kind of come down a little bit to prepare and participate in this chat. And then we all need to find that. It doesn't have to be as super macho as my watering flowers and baking, but you find what works for you.
Exactly. And that, I mean, that's uber important, especially for anybody that's listening at or participating, is you have to make it your own. I mean, I'm one of these guys that does a lot of research, and sometimes to a fault,
mm-hmm.
you know, looking for different grounding type of things or stuff like that, but you know, eventually you just get in your flow, and it's, you just know what you're doing, and it's the flow. It's hard to explain, but you know, I'm also a Reiki practitioner, so I will give myself a self-treatment and things like that just to ground. And this leads into, once you've provided that peer support, Paul,
mm-hmm.
How do you debrief from that, or for lack of better term, what I posed to the chat was, how do you cleanse yourself once all that's done? Is it similar type of thing where you're going back to the baking and the watering the flowers, or do you do something different other than that?
Well, and again, I think it depends on the event. It depends on the duration of the event, the magnitude of the event, our perception of the event, how it's affected us. You know, I mean, I was the co-coordinator for much of the peer support services following September 11th here in New York, and was right in the middle of that whole mess for about 9 weeks around the clock. And when we finally shut down our part of the operation, which really came about 9-10 weeks post-incident, really the first thing that I did was, and I made it known pretty much publicly to those around me, was I took about 3 or 4 weeks off and did nothing at all with peer support. You know, nothing at all with CISM. I even took a little time off for work. And I think you have to be able to do that. You know, so it depends on what the event brings to you, but when we're doing our peer support, whether it's one-on-one, whether it's group, even educational sessions where we kind of suggest to folks, you know, some of the things that they can do. We teach some basic stress management techniques, you know, talking to somebody, physical exercise, go for a walk. Doesn't mean you have to go and run a marathon, but go for a walk. If you work out, go work out. If you do Reiki, go ahead and do that. If you cook, bake, find something that works for you as far as stress management. You know, I think while we're suggesting that to other people, that we also have to practice that. That goes to what I said before, is it's one thing to talk the talk, but we have to be able to walk the walk. You know, I don't think it does us any good. It's hypocritical. If we suggest that to other people to try to help them when they're going through a stressful event, but we've gone through, you know, this secondary, you know, traumatization or vicarious traumatization, we go through a challenging event too because we're exposed to it. We catch some of it. That if we don't implement some of that ourselves, then I think we're hypocrites. And I think that many of us who've done peer support for a good while, who've survived many years in doing this, you know, that I think it's so ingrained in us that becomes really second nature, and I think that's a huge positive. Find what works for you. That's how I got into my cooking and my baking. That's how I came to appreciate flowers. I mean, you know, you find what works for you, and when you come home from something like that, maybe you just chill out. You know, maybe it's, I don't know what it is. Maybe it's the bubble bath. Maybe it's you're a runner. You go out and run for a couple miles. Maybe you run a little extra. You know, taking time to slow down. You know, what was it? Ferris Bueller said, life moves pretty fast. You know, if you don't stop and look around once in a while, you're going to miss it. And for those of us that have seen the end product over and over again, take that time. And I think that after we're doing what we do as far as peer support, I think that's a great time to do it. Decompress. Find what works for you. Have your mechanisms around you, whether they're people that you can go to if it's really, really bad, or just people around you that can kind of help lighten things up a little bit. Whether it's that you know, the dark humor, whether it's people that just are cheery, I think we have to. That's how we survive doing this.
Right. We just got a question that Sue posed, and what she's asking is, how much do you both feel, talking to both of us, how much do you both feel you run on intuition in these peer, like when in peer situations? I mean providing peer support. Do you feel that you run on intuition, Paul?
Well, I think it's a coupling of the both, isn't it? I mean, it's not unlike what we do certainly in the firehouse and many other situations. It's a coupling of our training as well as our past experience and our intuition. You know, what's your gut tell you? You know, when I teach my peer support and CISM classes that I've done on the road for over 20 years now, I start many of those classes by saying two things. There's two things you need to know if you're going to be a peer support provider. Very simply, two things. You need to know stress. What it looks like, smells like, talks like, walks like. You need to know stress in and out. What causes it, what reduces it, what it looks like, and you need to know people. You need to know the people that you're going to be working with, what makes them tick, what turns them off, what's going to help them relax. And, you know, I've been in some of these group situations where, you know, people are just like a big knot. And I've had peer support members say, you know, listen, you know, would it be okay? You look like you look tense. Can I rub your shoulders for a few minutes? Now, we don't teach that in the classes, you know, and certainly not going to go around doing that all the time. But you know what? If your intuition says, you know what, this is what this person needs. Let me tell you something. I have handed, there's stuffed animals. It may not be the story you want to tell in the locker room, but I'll tell you what, I've done it. And, man, I'll tell you what, you watch them wrap themselves around it. If that's what your gut feels, because I can't teach you that. You know, you can't put that into a book. What's your gut tell you? We all have that belly barometer. And the problem is so much of our training, so much of our daily life, and so much of our society says we need black and white. We need factual stuff. Well, yeah, that goes a long way, but what's your gut tell you? Does your gut tell you that, you know what, this needs a glass of water? This person needs, you know, let's go for a walk. It's, you know, it's 72 degrees out. You know what? Instead of sitting here doing this one-on-one, let's go for a walk. Let's get out into nature a little bit. Let's go, I don't know, because it's an infinite number of possibilities. So therefore, it's an infinite number of things we can do to help them resolve. But I think your intuition, your gut, is the best marker of that. Tim, what do you think?
Well, I'm gonna give you an example of what my gut tells me. I'll give you an example from just the last shift that I worked. We got called to the highway for it was a two-vehicle accident. Truck rolled over. When we were out, our chief got there first. We sent everybody. We're a small department. We sent both stations, an engine, a truck, a couple of ambulances, and then there was a town that covers another part of the highway that we were on that came from the other way, but they had to loop back around us. Get on the scene, you have a car that was on fire. There's four individuals laying on the side of the road, so who do you go to first, things like that. Well, it turned out that the one gentleman died horrifically in this accident. He's burned to death, but I don't know if he's dead on impact. But when we got there, there was a vehicle fire, the truck's on its side. And, just going back and forth, doing that initial treatment, EMS. But then after it settled down, somebody wanted, hey, I'm going to go over there and look at the body and things like that. And I stopped them like, you know what, 20 years ago, I responded to a scene very similar, but it was much worse because it was involving children. And I said, you know what, I don't need to see that again. That's not, I just turned my attention because all of a sudden I just saw one of the patients sitting on a bumper in an ambulance, and there was nothing wrong with him physically, but emotionally he was definitely not there. He had a dog with him in his vehicle. This dog got covered with diesel. I don't know how anybody, I'm surprised there weren't more deaths, but how they survived, how the dog got out of that truck. Same thing with its driver. And then our chief said, you know what, he had one of our guys that came back on a call back, coming in from the station and said, bring out some Dawn dish soap and we're going to wash this dog. We're going to get this diesel off of it. And I went up to the one patient. I said, are you all right? He says, emotionally, no, I'm not. I said, what about physically? He says, no, I'm okay with that. And, we got him in the back of the ambulance, and, I just tried to, comfort him. And I just went from the peer support end of it, more than being a lieutenant, more than being a firefighter or paramedic at the time. And I was trying to tell him, because of, HIPAA laws, I can't go into extreme details about everything. But, I said to them, this is, it's not your fault, things like that. Because obviously, what had happened, he was involved in, it resulted in the death of another human being. And that was something that was eating him up. So I just, I try to tell him, I know this might not mean much to you right now, but it's not your fault that this happened. And for whatever reason, I just put my hands on his head, and he said, thank you very much for all you guys did for me. Because we gave him his dog back. He's got the dog with him. The dog was able to go with him to the hospital. And without that dog knowing it, it's his service dog just in that instant. Yep. But I put my hands on his head and I said, you know what? God bless you and take care of yourself. His wife was coming from, had to drive down from out of state to get them. So it was going to be a while before she was going to get there. And I hope that we can follow up in some way just to make sure that they're okay. But if not, it's that showing of compassion. It's just, it wasn't even for me consciously that I did what I did. I just, it was like you said, being real. I just did it, and it felt right. And if you want to talk about a grounding, helping to wash that dog was definitely it. Because not only were we cleansing this dog of something toxic on it, but it's helping. It helped me to cleanse myself. Like, we're washing away what we saw here. We're able to deal with this. We're grounded enough to deal with it. But yet at the same time, we were providing comfort to, a couple of different people. I was involved with one of the other passengers in a car that, you know, was on fire, and we took care of him. And then after that, other ambulances took care of everything else. But after that, you know, when the death settled, you know, who else do you have? Who else do you know needs help? And if you're talking about intuition, this was another call that I was not on, but this is what my thoughts were. Some guy, there's a walking path that goes kind of underneath a bridge on one of our main roads through our town. And some guy got up on the top of the bridge, and there's a we call it the Calsag Channel, body of water that barges and things go through. And people were walking on this path, and they said, you know, they saw what this guy was going to do, that he was going to jump in, and he in fact did. He wrapped a tool bag around himself, and he jumped in. And I made the remark to somebody else. I said, how many patients do we have there? Because two people were able to pinpoint for the divers where he's at. And I said, how many people were there actually? How many patients did we really have? And everybody said, well, you got the one guy who he didn't survive when he jumped in. I said, actually, we got two others, the ones that witnessed it. How horrific is that for them to see something like that, and that's what you're not normally exposed to every day. So, for me, sometimes I could get edgy, but then other times I become very philosophical about things. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, you try to build up using that intuition. But I guess the best way to say it is, it's what feels right is what you're going to do.
Yeah. Absolutely.
So, yeah, I mean, we got about 5 minutes left on this, less than 5 minutes, so I'm going to leave that for you for, like, final thoughts on stuff, and then we could close out. If you have anything else with final thoughts that we haven't covered that would help the people that are listening tonight, and many of them may not be trained peer supporters, they may be just somebody who has PTSD, and they're here, and it's, you know, this community thing, this community outreach and support that Kate created, you know, a handful of years ago, and then it's just really blossomed into something really big as an online support. Is there any final thoughts you want to give them on how they can remain resilient?
Well, I mean, you know, listen, the work that people do, both, you know, through PTSD Chat and the others, I mean, you know, so many. I mean, yourself and Sue and Kate and Deb and, you know, Natalie Harris and so many other people. I mean, that's the example right there. That's the example right there. You don't have to wear a uniform. You certainly don't have to wear the same uniform. It doesn't matter what your vocation is. It doesn't matter what your background is. You know, two big things that to me stand out for those of us with PTSD. One, you're not alone. Two things right there. You know, and two of the things that literally kill our people is the fallacy of abnormality and the fallacy of uniqueness. You know, there's something wrong with me. Something wrong with me because I'm thinking about this. It's affecting me. It's, you know, I'm not a good firefighter. I'm not a good nurse. I'm not a whatever. And, you know, the fallacy that, you know, not only there's something wrong with me, but I'm the only one. Well, when you look at, you know, not just the social media aspect of this, but the amount of phone calls and texts and emails and whatnot that we get, who cares what caused it? Who cares how we got it? I'm not saying that to minimize it, you know. Us sticking together. You know, as you know, I'm a visual person. I like tinkering with things. I designed that PTSD coin. And the feedback that I've had from people has far surpassed what I thought it would be.
Why don't you talk about that coin in the last couple of minutes we got? Just so, you know, what it is out there, how people could find it if they want to buy one and things like that. It's been posted on the website, but if you want to talk about the origin of that and what you were hoping to do with the message of that coin.
Well, really, it was just, I mean, you know, I mean, certainly, you know, challenge coins are my thing. I've been on the road 20 years teaching, and I got to tell you what, it's, you know, the big kicker for me is when I'm teaching somewhere And somebody comes to me at the end of the class or at the end of a peer support, whether it be one-on-one or group intervention or 3-day sessions that I do down in North Carolina. I get these big rough and tumble boys and girls that come to me very often with tears in their eyes and give me a bear hug and say thank you. And I've had some of these people say, you saved my life. It's not me. It's us. It's what we do. And give me that challenge coin. Those challenge coins for me are the world. I've told my kids, God forbid anything happens to my house, you take the coins and run. the other medals and awards and stuff that I've gotten, not that they don't mean a lot, they certainly do, but my challenge coins are the world to me. And so I kind of came up with this idea of the challenge coin, that PTSD coin. And it's on the PTSD chat, .org website. It's on Amazon. If you go to Amazon, just search PTSD coin, post it up on Twitter later on. But, some of the words that I just came to my mind as far as, we're injured, we're not broken, we're not alone. This whole thing of ending the stigma, the stigma that kept a lot of us in the dark, and that's why I did this, the gold lettering on the black background, the symbolism of that is the emerging from the darkness that PTSD has been kept for so long. The reverse, PTSD in the back of the coin, is that we're turning things around. We really are. The fire service I came into 34 years ago, you didn't talk about this stuff. Certainly in the military and public safety and other places, you didn't talk about PTSD. And
right.
To me, it's a blessing that you travel down any interstate, you'll see these billboards, PTSD support, military veterans, if you have PTSD, call us, we can help. I mean, it's amazing. The resources are there. And that's my hope with this coin is, and I'm getting the proof every day when I get an email or a DM or a phone call from somebody who says, I had a phone call the other day from a friend of mine on the West Coast who said, I've been carrying the coin for about 3 weeks now, and it's a great coin, and I love it. Out of nowhere, my PTSD flared up, and that coin is keeping me grounded. I mean, that's what it's about for me, is that metal, that coin in your pocket, ties you to everybody else, who's got this. And that's why, I have a lot of friends. I didn't have any of the coins. I did not have any of the coins. One of the girls I work with came to me 2 weeks ago and said, I know you didn't have any. I bought you one of these. I mean, I got to tell you what, that's amazing. That's what stops me in my tracks,
You didn't have any because I was hogging them. I bought 3 right off the bat.
I didn't. When they all came in, the company sent them all to Amazon to be, to the fulfillment center. It's just, that's my hope, is that people, give them to people who have PTSD. I mean, really, talk about the significance and the write-up I have on the Amazon site of saying, give this to somebody who you know. If you're a mental health provider, give them to your patients who have PTSD and say, I care. Carry this with you. It's not unlike sobriety coins. I've carried those for years. You carry a sobriety coin, and every now and then, even just physically touching it, that's a grounding. You talk about grounding before, that's the grounding. I carry a coin with me all the time now. And that ties me to, whether it be the PTSD coin, I carry one for one of my lieutenants that I work with that I designed for MS awareness. Sometimes I carry a sobriety coin or a military coin. I'm never alone when I have that coin with me. And to get these messages from people has been, the word I used before, it's been humbling. It really has.
Well, you've done your, we are at the end of our show here, but we can go, both you and I could go into the chat now. It's a little bit after hours. A lot of people hang around there, and we could answer some questions or see what kind of feed we got out there. But I
sure.
Just want to let you know that this has been the greatest honor and privilege for me to be able to share this space with you for this last hour. We didn't think we were going to get it in, but, big shout out goes to Rebecca Kurzweil, who was working fiercely once she got her Wi-Fi up and running all the way in Costa Rica. So the biggest
wow.
Shout out goes to her to helping to make this happen. And we need to do this again sometime in the future. And, I got your number. We'll chat often, my friend.
Absolutely, brother. Listen, I thank you. I love you. The people listening, some of which, the vast majority of which we'll never meet. We're family. If nobody else tells you today, I love you. you know, keep helping others as best you can, but more so help yourself. Please help yourself, and you're worth it. You're not alone,
right,
and others care. Tim, thank you so much for everything.
All right. Take care, my friend.
Thank you, brother.
All right. Bye-bye.